Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is another Wednesday Kickstarter Spotlight episode, and it's my pleasure to welcome my friend Liam Sharp back to the show. Liam, thanks for joining me.
You're very welcome, Jace. Always a pleasure. It's good to see you, man. I feel like I've been in hermit land for the last year, as well as everybody else.
I know. I can remember. I mean, I think I saw you, I guess, at San Diego
I was at the San Diego Comic Fest. I don't think I've done San Diego Comic Con for a couple of years now.
Yeah,
so it's like the longest I've gone.
So it's been since WonderCon then in March. Yeah. This is the longest I haven't seen you in years. It's weird.
There you go.
Well, anyway, hopefully, you know, we'll get to see each other again in person soon. Hopefully this pandemic will end. And we'll all, you know, be safer and healthier, but we're here to talk about something that I'm really excited about. So, you know, fans of the Comic Source will know that, you know, we're big fans of Liam. He's an incredible artist, but the other thing that Liam loves to do is he loves to kind of pay respect to the history of comics and the artists that have come before. And that's what his current Kickstarter campaign is about. And it, you know, I'm the perfect kind of guy that this is aimed at, Liam, because I had heard of Jack Katz like tangentially, but I'd never been exposed to his art. And so as a fan of great comic art, thank you for doing this, because, you know, I was just looking at the images on the Kickstarter and I got to the one that was the first page of the Haunting DC six page. And like, honestly, my reaction, I saw that and I out loud, my God,
isn't it beautiful?
The art is just amazing. So why don't you tell everybody what the campaign is about?
Well, I suppose the story probably starts very early 2000s, probably about 2001, 2002. I was on the internet, as was everybody, and I stumbled across his work. And I had my mind blown. I was like, how have I missed this? Why don't I know about this guy? And that sort of sent me down this rabbit hole, just looking at all this magnificent work in the First Kingdom that I had never come across and never heard of. And that was confusing enough, because it was so much in my wheelhouse, you know. It had sort of elements of Barry Smith and Michael Kaluta and all the people I really admire, you know. It was super detailed. It was science fiction. It was fantasy. It was beautifully rendered. Incredible compositions. I'm a big fan of like epic poetry and like the mythology of like Greek and Celtic, and as you know from The Brave and the Bold, it's one of my things. And here was this story that was so mythic and vast that it just played totally to me, and I was like, what is this? So as soon as I started finding out about that and posting about it, that sent me, like I say, down this rabbit hole. And then when Titan collected the First Kingdom in the 6-volume hardbacks that they did in 2013, they asked me to write an afterword for the first edition, which I was more than happy to do. But at this time, I still had never met Jack. Mm-hmm. And it was only literally about 3 years ago in our local town, Concord, is just down the road in the Bay Area. And they have a really cute little convention there every year, or did when, you know, before obviously circumstances made that impossible. And Jack was there, and I couldn't believe it. So I, you know, of course I had to gather myself and go over and say hello and introduce myself. And you know, I went over and I was shaking in my, pants, literally, and just said, you know, Jack, I just wanted to say hi. I actually wrote the afterword for your The First Kingdom. And he was like, his eyes lit up. He was just like, this was meant to be. This was meant to be. This is destiny. You don't understand. The fates have brought us together. He got very sort of animated and excited. Drew me this little head sketch. And, it, you know, it gave me his address, invited me over. And that was the sort of start of it. And so, basically, I went over to see Jack at his place, and he pulled out all this amazing art. Tons of, I mean, one story, I'm trying to remember the name of it, something like The Heart of the City. And it's it's about 350 pages and unfinished. Wow. He got that far and never finished it, you know. And then he showed me these two particular ones, the one you're on about, the haunted painting one, and then this a romance one that is also being inked. And it's just, both of those two blew me away. They're both six-page stories. They had been submitted but rejected, and they've just been sitting here, you know, sitting in his house all this time. And I think
I'm getting goosebumps just hearing about this, because, oh my God, what an incredible find!
I know. I was just, you know, I couldn't believe it. This massive treasure trove. There's so much stuff and so many beautiful pages. I haven't even begun to sort of show. Well, we haven't shown much of what's going to be in there, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm still early to Kickstarter, so I'm sort of slightly loath to show too much, but I'm also right. It's hard for me to not show it, because right. it is spectacular. And I think obviously I'm going to let it trickle out a little bit more over the next few weeks as we get towards the end of the campaign. But basically I saw it all and I was like, Jack, why hasn't it been published? And he said, well, you know, it was rejected. So, yeah, but that's like, that was in the 60s. You know, we can do it now. And of course, you know, he was a pioneer of independent publishing. So his sort of legacy of that, we all owe a debt to. That's the crazy thing. You know, he did it when you had to post it out, you know. It's crazy, and everything's being done in mechanical ways, and paid. You're being paid by checks, and you have to send it out to people who have ordered it on with little cutout order boxes and all of that. I mean, what a different world we're in now.
Yeah.
And so, you know, to Jack, it was like, I just said, we can do this, and he said, well, you know, we've got to raise the money. I was like, we don't have to do that, Jack. We can do it through Kickfunder. You don't have to worry about all of that. And he said, well, whatever we make, we'll just put into the next project. And I'm like, no, Jack, you'll make some money out of this, you know, and don't worry about it. The next project will fund itself. It'd be great. So it's really exciting, because he has been, sorry, I'm talking on and on. I'm very passionate about this.
Oh, this is exactly what we want to hear.
But he's, he's sort of been criminally forgotten. And the amount of people, when I'm showing it online, the amount of people who are going, why have I never heard of it, the same way I did. Same reaction I did. It's like, why have we never heard of it? And I'm also in touch with his ex-wife, who's still very close to him and a very good friend of his, and becoming a good friend of mine. She talks about the times that they worked together on the First Kingdom, and how, you know, he spent 12 years doing this massive saga that was over 1,000 pages long, and it was sort of a big deal at the time, and he sort of was a triumphant king in 82, going to San Diego, where he was celebrated on the cover of the brochure, and he got the Inkpot Award, which is, you know, that's the big convention award for San Diego. He everyone thought he was going to be like rich and famous, and it would be a TV series and a film and all of that. And sadly, none of that materialized. And after the First Kingdom, he's just sort of just slowly disappeared, you know. And it's kind of, that needs putting right. It does need putting right. And seeing him just drawing away these page after page after page every day, these very personal, really out there stories that he feels are so important to him that nobody's getting to see. It's just like, no, we got to do something about it. And so, you know, as I say, I became friends, and we've just slowly worked towards that. And then the other thing was to invite popular people of today, people who knew Jack and have been inspired by Jack, to ink a page, which is a celebration of his work. And also, I thought it would help in sort of show it to that new audience. So if all of us can reach to our audiences, then we can hopefully get the word a little bit wider that way. So that's what we've been doing. It's been amazing.
I think having the modern inkers is just a brilliant idea, because there's a couple of things that I think it does really, really well. First of all, I've been hearing, and this comes in cycles, but I hear at various times from various comic fans that say, I just don't understand inking. It's hard for me to appreciate inking. I don't, you know, so many people think it's just tracing the line, the pencil lines that are on the page. And it's so much more than that.
Yes.
With Jack's pencils, which are, you know, just stunning. And then being able to compare, okay, this is what Michael Cho's inks look like on
right.
Jack's pencils. This is what Sandra Hope's. And then fans can kind of start to understand, okay, I now I see the difference. I see what an inker can bring. So that's one thing. The yep. other thing is the fact that these inkers, I mean, they must have been chomping at the bit to work on this Legends pencils. But at the same time, I think to myself when I see the pencils, and if I was an inker, and I know you inked some of them, is that intimidating? Like, oh my God, he's a legend. You know, these are beautiful. Like, I don't want to mess it up.
I'm fighting people off now. You know, people are every day. People are contacting me and saying, "Can I do one? Can I do one?" I was like, "No, there's nothing left." You know, because it's also important that these pencils are so beautiful. The book's meant to celebrate his pencils, so I don't want to overwhelm it with modern pencils. There's right. a few pages that will be a really fun central back of the book, but the rest of it is celebrating the pencils as they are, and they'll be mm-hmm. sort of like high resolution reproduction. But yeah, it's funny, the pages that the reactions I've had from people once I've actually sent the pencils to them, and they've gone, holy shit, oh my God, this is not going to be easy, it's quite intimidating, and they see what everyone else has done, you know. But everyone's I just think it's great. It's so you know, the one that Brian Hitch inked is just looks like it was drawn yesterday, you know, for a present day marketplace, which is quite an achievement for someone of his age. But it also shows, I mean, Sandra Hope's inks are particularly beautiful because she inked one of the 60s ones, and the romance story. And the fact that she's been able to imbue it with such sort of elegance and nuance and subtlety, it's sort of, for me, I looked at it and I just thought, this feels really modern, but it also feels like 70s a little bit. It feels like sort of Barry Smith era type, had that kind of vibe to it. And then there's obviously the romance element of the 60s. So it's got this really kind of timeless appeal, which is fascinating. And it's lovely seeing Sandra do a piece of work like that that's got a little bit more, you know, that's sensitive and isn't sort of superhero work. She's just nailed it. Mike Perkins did one. He's done two pages. It's just like it's just classic Jack. So he'll come up with a character and he'll get really into it, and then he'll start drawing the story and get two pages in and go, ah, it's not quite working, and then it just doesn't go anywhere. And this one's called The Imaginator, which is, so it's two pages of this character turning up with his backpack and reaching a group of people and starting to tell the stories. And I saw that and thought, well, that's perfect. That's like that's the perfect lead into the whole book,
right?
You know, to this whole section. He's the Imaginator, and the rest of the book is the stories that he's telling. So we're trying to sort of, you know, put some structure on it that makes sense and keeps it in context. There are complete stories, and there's a big section which will just be samples of bigger stories. Because, like I said, there's the one that's 350 pages. There's another that's like 150 pages. It's just crazy. You know, you think about 150 pages. How much of a year did he spend drawing this thing that no one's ever going to see? You know, and it's hard to know what to do with that sometimes, but I want people to see it because it needs seeing. It's beautiful. So I think we've addressed that.
Well, the other thing that I'm really happy is the fact that you got to do this while Jack is still here with us.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I think that's so important. You know, so many of the legends, Jack's contemporaries are no longer with us. And the fact that you're bringing this to a new contemporary audience, like I can't wait. I can't wait to get my hands on it and see it. Because again, like I said, I'm so happy you did this, because now I get to discover this work, and it's amazing and it's worth seeing. And, you know, people hear underground comics and they hear, you know, 60s, 70s, and they think it's like, you know, pornographic or smut. This is not that at all. Just go to the Kickstarter and look at this incredible art. And, you know, you don't need to necessarily dive all the way into you know, his story, that it took him 24 years to, you know, to get out, the first kingdom. You can just enjoy this for what it is. And it can be your gateway, into other things if you want. And if not, you can just enjoy it for the artwork that it is. But it's, yeah, I'm so happy that you were able to do this while Jack is still here.
It's interesting. Joe Field, who he's the local comic shop owner. He actually created Free Comic Book Day, which is another great legacy. But he owns Flying Colors, mm-hmm. in Concord, and he was telling me how he'd mentioned to one comic publication, he'd said to them, "Why don't you celebrate so and so while they're still alive?" You know, and the publication had said, "Because that's not news." And he'd always been really, so he just thought that was the wrong approach to an industry and a wrong approach to these people. You know, what are we waiting for them to pass on before we celebrate them? Why not celebrate them while they're alive, you know? And Jack deserves it. Mm-hmm. He does. And it's not easy. It's hard when you know, we live in a bit of I'm trying to think of the best way to present it, really. I think people, the industry is slightly misrepresented it, because there's so much material now that we're seeing on Netflix and the cinema and all of that. It seems like anyone who draws a comic automatically gets a TV show and a film. And as a result, we're all rich and famous and living fabulous lives. The truth is, that's a tiny percentage of the thousands of people in the industry that are working away with the same hopes and dreams. And there's only a very, very, very minuscule few that actually are lucky enough to have that happen, you know. And it shouldn't ever be an expectation, and it should be clearly understood that is not the truth of the matter. It isn't it isn't our living day-to-day reality for by far the biggest portion of the community. And that can be even hard for creators themselves, especially when opportunities seem to present themselves and then fall by the way. And a lot of us have had that, including me. So, you know, I spent a good 10 years struggling, way under the radar and feeling completely forgotten and completely like I would never make it back into any kind of, you know, mainstream sort of sensibility or into a place where the industry would know who I was again, you know, and I'm very grateful for that. But when I see Jack's plight, I sort of think there, but for the grace of God, you know, it's like, it's, you recognize it and your heart goes out it is a hard world. It's a hard world, the world of an artist, the life of an artist. It's not all roses, and it's not all we just get up and draw all day and it's easy. It's not, you know, it's hard. It's graft, and it's daring, and it's having the nerve, and it's doing it regardless of everything. And Jack was more true to his own spirit than 99% of us will ever be. Mm-hmm. And he had to just do it. He had to do what was in his mind. He had these stories and he had these visions. And he had this sense that it needed telling, and it was his duty to tell them. And he just got on with it. And, you know, that should be celebrated.
Yeah, I agree. And I agree with what Joe was saying too. I mean, there's so many creators that I wish I'd had a chance to meet that are no longer with us, but you know, the fact that I got to meet Len Wein and Darwin Cook and, you know, some of the others that are no longer here, I would not trade that. And so, you know, we need to celebrate and I say this all the time, if there's a creator that you like, you never know. It doesn't matter what the age, you never know. If you get a chance to go to a convention and see them or a signing they're doing at a shop, go, because you just never know. Life is short and things can happen. And so, yeah, I agree with you 100%. And as far as Jack goes, the thing that's interesting, as I was when I first saw the Kickstarter and I went and looked him up and did some research, and I saw that there were some friction early on in his career because he was slow. When you look at his, you know, in compared to contemporary, he probably faster than most of the guys working these days. But he put so much detail, you can see why. And to your point about him being true to his spirit, he didn't say, okay, well, I'm going to change and draw faster and pump these things out because I, you know, that's what needs to be done. He was true to what he felt the art should be. And so you have to respect somebody for that. And, you know, with First Kingdom, yeah, maybe he was only putting out 2 issues a year, but you know what? He finished it.
Yeah, he did. He did. And I think as well, you know, if he was slow, it's because he kept getting sidetracked by his own stories and his own visions and things he wanted to do. But it's funny because he quit the business 3 times and kept coming back. Mm-hmm. And when he came back to do the First Kingdom, that was after a huge break. That was something like a 14-year break from what he said. And he just couldn't bottle it anymore. He couldn't contain it within himself. It was just, he calls it the rising tide within. And funnily enough, I can speak to that because I had the exact same thing over a shorter period in my 4 years at Madefire. Was that by the time I got back to drawing again, it just exploded out of me and, you know, has led to the most creative time in my life since I started on Wonder Woman. I haven't stopped for the last 5 years now. It's just been like a constant. It's astonishing, you know, and I do feel like that creativity sort of backs up inside you. Yeah. It's quite physical and it's astonishing to be able to have that release. And I think when he came back to the First Kingdom and started that vast project, that's what was happening. He was letting all of that out, everything go. All the frustrations that he'd had early in his career, he put aside. All of that time not drawing, he channeled into drawing. And he just did what he had to do. And, you know, thank God he did, because what an astonishing piece of work. And I think as well, hopefully the people, because not enough people have seen The First Kingdom. Mm-hmm. And yes, it is of its time. And yes, it is a heavy piece of work. You know, it's not easy to get through. Mm-hmm. But you don't have to. You can just look, you can own those books and just pore over the artwork. And yes, there's naked figures in it, but there's nothing salacious about it. It doesn't have that quality. It's not the intent of it. You know, it's biblical. It's like, it's from primitive people to the vast distant future. It's a massive, massive epic story that sort of encapsulates, you know, history, science and magic all in one huge sort of tome. But what we're doing is much smaller and definitely is in different sort of genres. The central sort of 22-page story, and it's funny, it's one of those things, Jack, I found it and it's like, there's a 22-page story here, Jack. What is it? He said, I don't know. You can't remember it? I said, I don't know where it came from. I don't know why I did it. I've no idea what the story is. But it seems to be complete. That's the whole story and the cover. He's like, yeah, I don't know what it is. You have to get someone to write a script. So you literally know nothing about this. He says, it doesn't matter. The story's there. You can figure it out. So it's almost like a Marvel-style approach, you know, a classic sort of Marvel style. Here's the pictures. You can get a script for that. So, you know, that was fun.
Well, let me ask you this, Liam, being that you know him personally, and so many, like you're, I'm going to use you yourself as an example because we know each other so well. You mentioned your Brave and Bold series with Batman and Wonder Woman earlier. And to me, that is you personally on the page. That is your personality. Whenever I read it, I feel like you're standing there next to me. You know, I'm hanging out with Liam. I'm reading his book. Do you get the sense of that with Jack's art, being that you know him personally? Like, is this him on a page?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, 100%. And I think when you are given the opportunity to tell the story you want to tell, that's inevitably a part of what's on the page. You know, if you're doing it right anyway, you know, because otherwise there's something cynical, I think. I always think that you shouldn't try to tailor what you're doing for an audience. You have to do it from authentically. You have to do it from your heart. You know, I kind of guessed that the Brave and the Bold with the Celtic story and everything might not be what every Batman fan would particularly want. Mm-hmm. No, it's not. One of the complaints I heard about that book was that it's not a Batman book. It's a, it's not focusing around him, or it's not focusing around Diana. And it's like, well, in what way isn't it? He's being a detective and she's being a peacemaker. You know, and there's a war about to bubble over here, and a god's been killed. You know, in what way are they not being true to themselves? But I get it in the sense that there's a certain part of the audience that wants it to be speaking to the inner demons of those characters, or to be more personally rooted in those characters rather than them just being what they are. You know, or and perhaps on that sense, it didn't really dig into who Diana was, and it didn't really dig into who Bruce was. But it told a story about the Celtic gods using them, you know, as the vehicle. And it was yes, it was Diana, and yes, it was Batman. And maybe they have got a point in the fact that, from what you say, that's me on the page. My love was with the Celtic mythology. You know, my heart was in that. The comic I always wanted to draw was about Nuadar and the Silver Arm and the Fomorians and the Tuatha De Danann and all of those gods and all of those stories. So, you know, maybe they've got a point after all.
I don't agree with them. Because there's any number of thousands of Batman stories they can go out that dive into that stuff.
Right.
You know, I do want to, you know, read a story where I do feel like I'm getting more of the artist. I do want to pick up this Kickstarter book of Jack, and I may never get a chance to meet him. This might be the closest I get to, you know, knowing Jack personally is seeing his work and seeing how much of himself he's poured into that. And I think that is very important, especially considering where Jack came from, you know, the contemporaries. I mean, this guy was a contemporary of Raymond and Toth. I mean, you know, who of us wouldn't want to bend their ear or, you know, look at their work, you know, and here we all have a chance to do that with Jack's work.
I know when you sit with Jack and he tells you about Alex Raymond and just said, he loved Alex Raymond, by the way. He just said Alex was such a sweet guy. And he said Alex would look at his work and just kind of say, well, you got no spot blacks. Why aren't you putting the spot blacks in? I want to see more shadows. And Jack would be like, but I want to do the anatomy. I want to see the anatomy. I don't want to put just black shadows in. So you hear all of these stories. And then he tells about, because he was also great friends with Jack Kirby. Mm-hmm. And so he said he would go and see Jack in LA and sit in his pool in the shallow end because he couldn't swim. And they would talk about comics, and Jack Kirby would be going, yeah, but you got to do it for the kids. The kids, this is a kids marketplace. And Jack would be like, no, comics don't have to be for kids. They can be for grown-ups too. You know, I'm trying to further it and elevate the medium and make it something else. And so they'd have these lovely debates about what a comic should be and what it could be. And he was also great friends with John Buscema too. And he was saying how there was a point when he was going to write a story for John Buscema. And he almost convinced him, and he was just about to do it. And they were eating, they were eating crab or lobster or something in some restaurant in New York they were sitting at. And Buscema was all like, okay, Jack, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it. And Roy Thomas had got wind that this conversation was going on and turned up and sort of said, John, we want to offer you Conan, you know. And Jack's like, oh, you know, and he got offered so much money he couldn't say no. But can you imagine what a great thing it would have been for Buscema to do something like, you know, completely his own.
Wow.
So I love hearing these stories. You know, like you say, who's alive that he even knew Alex Raymond?
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, that's great. Well, listeners, this is another one of those Kickstarters that's already fully funded. So, you know, if you go and back it, you're for sure going to get it. In fact, gone well past your goal, Liam. So congratulations on that.
Thank you.
But have you heard a lot of, you know, a lot of times with these Kickstarters, it becomes a community, you know, in and of itself. Do you get a sense, or have you gotten a sense of who the backers are? I got to imagine there's a lot of creators of professionals that work in the industry now that saw this and went, oh, I got to jump on this. Have you gotten a sense of that at all?
I've had some really nice messages, private messages. I'm trying to, you know, it's one of those things because I'm new to it. And I know that, especially in this community, we can get a little bit bombarded with Kickstarters. There's everyone's trying to find ways to make comics live for them and for the industry itself. And there's such a kind of new wave of boutique publishing going on, which is fascinating and wonderful. But I'm also keen that I should support comic shops. And so there's a kind of weird mix of like, how do we mesh these two worlds together so that they work for each other? Because I think it is a bit of a problem for comic shops. I'm getting slightly off topic and derailing myself, but it is a bit of a problem, I think, in that, you know, if all of the people who love these kind of projects invest in the Kickstarters up front, then often they're the people who would go to the comic shop that would buy it in the comic shop as well, because there is a crossover. So it's hard for those things to exist in both those areas. But I'm trying to find ways around that, and I'm learning as I go. The community is, from what I can see, extremely enthusiastic. I'm only just learning what you're telling me as well, which is that the Kickstarter community is a community itself. And I hadn't realized that until we started doing it. It's almost like Facebook or like Twitter or whatever, except it's a group of enthusiasts who are really into the things that they're into. Like, you know, clearly there's a massive community for gaming, for games. Mm-hmm. Who knew? And these people are backing games just made on Kickstarter, and then they're all playing it, and it's awesome. And people are, and those things are huge. They're like vastly bigger than comics. You know, some of the biggest things on there. We just ordered a set of pans for the kitchen off Kickstarter, so so you know, we're getting invested in the whole process. I don't know. It's a learning curve. I'm delighted at how well it's gone. I'm trying to keep people updated without being a pest. Doing these kinds of things, I'll send out, when this goes live, I'll send out a link to the backers so that they can listen to this. And, you know, just try to keep it, you know, good-natured and on the right course and, you know, positive. I do like the positivity, that's for sure. You know, there's not enough of that.
Yeah. We can all do with a little more.
Right. You know, and I try, maybe it's my age, God knows, I don't know. But I try to do that on Twitter, and I try to do that on Facebook. Wherever I am, it's like, God, it doesn't take much to keep things civil. Really, it doesn't. It doesn't. And you don't have to just be sort of dismissive all the time. You know, you can... Even when people directly disagree with you, you can actually have reasonable conversations if you give it half a second. So yeah,
no, I agree. That old adage, you know, if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all. There's a lot to that. Just because somebody likes something you don't, that's not an attack on you, and you don't need to say anything. You can just move on. Like, there's enough negativity. But to our point of it's already being funded, you know, you're going to get it. And it funded relatively quickly. That for you, I'm happy about that, because then the pressure's off, right? So, you know, anybody who goes, you know, like I said, you're going to get it. And also, you know, there's no struggle of, hey, let's meet the goal and it's going to be printed. So now it's just a matter of, we need to get the word out to as many comic fans as possible, because everybody who wants it, Jack and Liam want everybody who wants it to be able to get it. And this is the way you get it. So even if you can't pledge or it's not for you, please just share it on your social media, so maybe somebody else who wants it can get it. So even if it's not for you, even if you don't have the means right now to pick it up, just share it on your own social media, Twitter or Facebook or Instagram or what have you, just so we can help get the word out to as many comic fans as possible. Because, you know, I'm like I said at the beginning, I'm the perfect target for this. I had only very briefly had heard the name Jack Katz. I wasn't familiar with his work, and I was just stunned when I saw it. So, like I said, even if you're not going to get it yourself, or you don't have the means right now, just please share it. It's so important, right, Liam?
Well, that's true, and I I've said online, anyone who's serious about comics, who really loves the industry and loves the medium, you know, you should have at least one Jack Katz book. And if it's not this one, that's fine. But go do yourself a favor, you know, order the first book of The First Kingdom. Order something. Get one Jack Katz book because you owe it to yourself. If you're serious about comics, you owe it to yourself. If you want to know about comics and you want to have a broad understanding of it, you know, this is the whole thing. I often equate it to music. Like, you know, I adore music. Lots of comic people seem to. It's very hard, I think, to spend 12 hours alone a day if you don't have something else, especially when you go into the graft stage and the finishing stage. You know, so I'll pencil to silence, but then when I come to the finishing off, I'll often put music on. And what I love about the world right now, one of the better things about the world right now, is that digital music has enabled you to go down many, many rabbit holes relatively easy to find out the sources and the roots. You know, you can, who knew that the Ink Spots totally inspired Elvis Presley? When you listen to it, you can totally hear how the phrasing and the talking and the, everything, you know, different tone, but absolutely, you know, you can follow those kinds of roots. The way the classic rock came out of the blues and funk and all of those kinds of pathways back through time become very appealing the more you look at these things. And I think one of the great joys of comics is not just reading what's current today and loving the books that you love today, but actually understanding where they came from and who the pioneers were and who inspired who and where people have had a direct impact on other people and other people after that. And sometimes the people who have inspired us get lost along the way. And Jack's one of those, you know, he inspired many, many people. And he deserves to have his rightful place in that sort of ongoing legacy of great comic illustrators through time.
Yeah, and it's not just looking at it from the perspective of a fan of knowing where this industry came from, how it's changed over time. But if you want to be in comics, if you want to break in, if you want to be an illustrator, boy, I mean, you could do a lot worse than looking at Jack's work and trying to, you know, learn lessons about composition and line work and shading. I mean, this would be a great book, you know, if you're struggling to break in where, hey, how can I get better? Here's a quick example. You're going to see the pencil work of a legend.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I'm just grateful to have met him, and I continue to marvel at his work. And beyond this too, he has a treasure trove. He took a couple of years out just to paint. And so he's got all these canvases of astonishing paintings, oil paintings of life in New York in the 40s. You know, which is like, you've never seen anything like it. Very idiosyncratic, completely uniquely his own style. Absolutely stunning. And this is a book I'm very keen to do following this one, because I think it's, you know, ideally at the end of this, we'll have a little collection over the next few years of Katz work that are well worth, you know, investing in and treasuring.
Yeah, I agree. Well, as we're wrapping up here, Liam, can you tell everybody what are some of the rewards that are available? Obviously, you can get the book itself, but there's some other like plates as well. Is that right?
Yeah. In I believe it was 82, Jack did for that San Diego, the one I was mentioning earlier, he did a portfolio of First Kingdom pieces that were published then and have never been published since. And it's just six individual plates. We are one of the other rewards is that you can buy the book and you can get this extremely limited set of prints. And one of which I've coloured, so it's unique in that it's the first time this piece has ever been coloured. And you know, it's my little gift back to Jack, I guess. So that's one of them. There's another option to just get the coloured print with the book, or there's, of course, the option to get the book. And because we got funded, it started out as a 120-page softback, but now, because we met three goals. It's across the board, hardback with a dust jacket, and we stuck an extra 20 pages in there. So it's 140 pages, dust jacket, hardback for everybody. And really, that's the most important one. You know, if you don't buy anything, buy the book. You know, you can buy just the print, I think, too. But really, we did this for the book. The rest of it is fun.
Yeah.
And obviously, the San Diego convention thing, that's a lovely thing, just because the pieces are so beautiful. Mm-hmm. And I probably shouldn't say this, but they're going to be in the book anyway, in black and white, so you will get them regardless. But if you want them at the bigger side as individual prints to put on the wall, then that's available as an option.
Were you surprised how fast it funded? Were you kind of nervous, like, oh, I don't know if it's
yeah, I mean, I had no idea what to expect, you know. I think I knew what it deserved. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, as we both observed earlier on, you know, his day in the sunshine was a while ago. So it doesn't matter how brilliant things are sometimes. People can be curiously indifferent. Mm-hmm. And it's very hard to break through a difference. It's indifference is like one of the most powerful kind of immovable things. If you come up against it and you struggle with it, then it's really hard to shift. But I think the fact that Jack's work is so immediately brilliant, and I think I got lucky too, that the image that I fixed on as the main sort of selling point of the dancer, mm-hmm. I think you've only got to look at that and you kind of, you're like, oh, what's that? Mm-hmm. Who's that?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I kind of recognize it. There's something familiar about it, you know. It's such a beautifully drawn piece of pencil work that I think I lucked out with that image, and that spoke to people. But I think the story itself I think the story itself talks to people. It's just Jack's story and the story we're telling. The fact that there are these untold pencil, the unseen pencils, yeah, finished stories from the 1960s that nobody's seen.
Yeah.
It's that all by itself for me is like enough. It would be enough for me to buy it. That's for sure, you know.
That must have been a fun phone call too, when it funded so quickly and you got to call Jack and, hey, it's funded already. What was his reaction?
Well, I had to go around to see him to get the book plate signed. And, he's thrilled to bits, but he's also like, I don't think he can quite take it in, because he's very, offline. He's very, mm-hmm. he only takes the phone. He doesn't have email. He doesn't do texts.
Right.
He's very, very old school. So, you know, and I'm not very good on the phone. my head's down and it's like suddenly 10 o'clock and I'm like, oh, I can't talk to somebody at this time of night or whatever. Yeah. There's so much going on. I'm much better at like emails when I can just respond. So sometimes it's a bit of a while before I'm in touch with him and I have to catch him up on everything. But yes, he's thrilled. He's going to be even more thrilled when he sees the book.
Oh, I'm sure.
And I can't wait to give him, because I don't think he's got really any idea that, you know, I think I mentioned earlier, you know, he was saying, well, whatever we make, let's put it into the next book, put all the money in the next book. And I'm like, that's not how this works, Jack. You're going to get some money out of this. You know, you're
well
going
to get,
yeah, you, this is going to, this is going to put money in your pocket and it's going to allow you to keep working and keep drawing and it's going to take the pressure off and it's going to, you know, make your life a little bit easier. And I know that's happening now because I know what we've got. So
yeah.
No, that is a joy for me. It fills me with so much sort of happiness that I'm going to be able to take a lovely big check over to him and say, this is yours, Jack, and you deserve it, you know? So it's important.
Yeah, and again, you know, thanks for doing it, Liam. It means so much. You know, you're so generous to do this for Jack, and it's amazing. So, as we're winding up here, if people want to follow you and your work online, you want everybody. You mentioned being active on on Twitter. I know we just found out yesterday that Mark Hamill's a big fan. That was that was cool to see. I was so happy for you.
Oh God, yeah. Talk about being taken back to the age of, you know, 8 when Star Wars came out. I was such a massive Star Wars nerd. I collected the black and white British reprints of Star Wars till I was, you know, well into my upper teens. Mm-hmm. It was a subscription that I had, and I could never bring myself to stop. In fact, I think I only stopped it when it got so far down that they started reprinting the first stories all over again. It's like, I've got all these. Yeah, but you know, I was also one of the kids that loved Luke. I was more of a Luke kid than a Han kid. So you know, I woke up grinning this morning. I went to bed. I had goosebumps for about 3 hours last night after that. It was ridiculous.
I can imagine. Not only does he know who you are, he's a fan. It's so cool. Yeah,
really. That's the first thing I said to all my kids this morning. Oh, did you know that Mark Hamill's a fan of mine? Oh dear. Oh, we love Mark Hamill. When he appeared in What We Do in the Shadows recently, we all cheered. It was great. How can you not love the guy? He's so great with the fans. He's such a kind of spirited, just good, but you can tell he's a good guy, you know, and he's like proper into it, you know. And obviously he loves comics and the Joker stuff and Brilliant.
Yeah, well, he's one of those guys that it hasn't gone to his head. He doesn't take himself too seriously. You know, he's happy to show up on a show and make fun of, you know, himself and Star Wars.
Yeah.
And you gotta like a guy like that.
Impossible not to. So, yeah, it made my day completely. Well, made my whole year so far.
Well, remind everybody, what's your Twitter handle if they want to eavesdrop on your conversations with Mark Hamill? Yeah. Or follow along with your work.
It's Liam R. Sharp on Twitter. There's other Liam Sharps, apparently, so the R is important. That's pretty much the big one. And there's sharpy.net, sharpy.net is my website. And that needs a little update, so I need to get on there and put the Jack Katz links in and all of that. There's too many things, isn't there?
Oh, yeah. Never enough time. And we don't want you away from that drawing table for too long. We know that you finished up your run on Green Lantern with Grant Morrison. And I know you've got something new coming up that you can't announce yet. But everybody, I'll put links to Liam's social media in the show notes, along with the link to the Kickstarter campaign. So be sure you go there, check out the campaign. Also give Liam a follow so that when he does get to announce his next big thing, you're going to be there. And be able to know what it is. And then, you know, I look forward to at some point having you back on to talk about some creator known for yourself. I know we've mentioned it about having you come on when the time is right. And in fact, I'll show you, this is my current background for my desktop that I'm using. If you can see that, when you put out the images, I said, you know what? I need some Liam Sharp art for my background. So that's what my current background.
Oh, nice.
My desktop. I just threw a bunch of my favorite Liam images together, including the one from your creator owned at some point.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That project I really want to do. You know, I don't know when it's going to be, but I'm very sincere about doing the Ghost in the Sword. It's an important, it's my first kingdom, actually. It's got similarities, so we'll see when and if I get to that. DC seem to be keeping me pretty busy, and honestly, while they're doing that, they give me so much freedom, particularly with the Green Lantern towards the end, when they let me just cut loose completely and do all the crazy painted stuff for the last five issues. You know, the fact that they've let me do it and backed me and got behind it and supported it, and that people have responded so well to it, and that I'm doing the next series exactly the same. So I'm doing the full color, that kind of digital, I say digital, it is done in Photoshop, but it's using like a lot of scanned media. So it's almost it's a mix of media, really. I'm just thrilled that they let me do that for this next 6-issue. I'm probably okay saying that it's going to be like a prestige format 6-issue thing. Can't say any more than that.
No, I get you in trouble, but I'm glad to hear it's prestige because you're like the bigger I can see your art, the better. That's basically what it comes down to.
Well, thank you, mate. That's appreciated.
And thanks to all you listeners for tuning in. I can't stress enough, just go and check out the Kickstarter because the images are amazing. And as Liam and I have said, Jack is so deserving, and this is art that really needs to be seen. So go and check it out. And again, even if you can't back it yourself or it's not for you, be sure and share it on social media so everybody gets a chance to see it. So great catching up with you, Liam. Thanks so much.
Always a pleasure.
Always great.
Cheers, Jace.
And to you listeners, once again, thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you next time.
You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.